Hello there. Today is Thursday, August 9th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the United States hits Russia with steep sanctions.
I think it's going to cause a fair amount of pain.
A Muslim woman is about to make history in the U.S. Congress. Climate scientists say wildfires and record heat across the globe are a taste of what's to come. Also ahead, Jennifer Lopez has a new hit, and she's about to get a big award. It's all on today's International Edition. The United States is imposing tough new sanctions on Russia after determining Moscow was responsible for poisoning a former Russian spy and his daughter in Britain in March. The State Department said Russia broke international law when it used a lethal nerve agent against its own nationals. The sanctions are set to take effect on August 22nd. Robert Manning, a security analyst and senior fellow at the Atlantic Council, says Russia will feel it.
They're pretty extensive. It involves technology exports. It involves both international institution lending and lending from U.S. banks. There are some potential waivers on some of the technology exports, for example, spare parts for the space station, which we still have with Russia, and that sort of thing. And I think there are some other waiver possibilities, but I think it's pretty extensive, and it's coming at a time when the ruble has hit new lows. The sanctions have driven down their currency to record, almost pretty close to record lows. I think it's down to 65 to the dollar or something like that. So I think it's going to cause a fair amount of pain.
A senior State Department official said Wednesday that Russia could face another round of more draconian sanctions within 90 days unless it provides reliable assurances it's no longer using chemical or biological weapons. The sanctions announced Wednesday are mandatory and triggered by a 1991 congressional law, the Chemical and Biological Weapons Control and Warfare Elimination Act. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. Pakistan and Russia sign a rare military cooperation pact. Scattered protests and heavy security across Iran after new sanctions. A New York congressman is arrested and charged with insider trading. And the UN urges Israel and Hamas to step back from the brink. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. History will be made as the U.S. Congress is poised to welcome its first Muslim woman, Rashida Tlaib, who won her district's Democratic nomination for Michigan's 13th congressional district, incorporating the city of Detroit Tuesday night. The region is home to one of the largest Muslim and Arab American populations in the U.S. And since there's no Republican challenger in November, the primary election is the only close race Tlaib will face before being sworn in as a freshman U.S. congresswoman, a role many Muslim Americans across the country are now watching with eagerness and hope. VOA's Victor Beatty talked about the historic nature of this with Kyle Condit, an analyst with the website Sabato's Crystal Ball at the University of Virginia.
It is a rather amazing story, and I think it also speaks to just a larger trend in both the Democratic Party and in American life more broadly, and that is that, you know, the country is unquestionably becoming more diverse. The electorate gets a point or two more non-white every 4 years, and a lot of non-white voters are concentrated in the Democratic Party, and I think you're starting to see the emergence of different-looking Americans who are representing their various constituencies in Congress. And just a more diverse Congress, certainly the election in November of the first Muslim American woman to be in Congress is another step toward that. And also, she happens to be someone who is kind of on the left wing of the Democratic Party. And you know, I think both parties have been sort of becoming more ideologically polarized, and so she's part of that story too.
Well, she did mention in her victory speech at this Michigan primary election headquarters that she's wondering if President Trump is ready for her. her?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of her potential power is tied up into whether her party can win Congress, win the House back next year. And I think Democrats look better than 50-50 probably to win the House, but I don't think that it's some sort of slam dunk. So we'll just have to see. But, you know, there are lots of very safe, very blue Democratic districts across the country. This district in the Detroit area is no exception. But in order to actually wield power in the House, the members elected from those districts need to rely on Democrats winning from other parts of the country that are far less Democratic, because the overall U.S. House map skews Republican. The median House seat based on presidential performance in 2016 is a district that voted for President Trump by about 2 points. And Hillary Clinton won the national popular vote by 2 points herself. And so that the median House district is about 4 points to the right of the nation. And so, again, it's going to take all different kinds of Democrats to win the House, not just people who are on the left from very Democratic districts.
Kyle, might she impact in some way U.S. Mideast policy?
I would say it's sort of premature to say that. I will say that the Democratic Party and liberal activists, I think, have been a little more suspicious of Israel and maybe a little bit more supportive of the Palestinians and sort of the never-ending, dispute between the Palestinians and the Israelis. And so she may be sort of reflective of kind of a changing positions in the Democratic Party on that issue. And Republicans, I think, are almost universally extremely supportive of Israel. So that's one more issue in American life where I think the parties are becoming more and more polarized.
Another part of this story, of course, Kyle, is the fact that she's replacing John Conyers, who's been in that seat for the past 5 decades.
Yeah, Conyers was part of an old guard of Democratic lions in the House that are, almost entirely gone now. Conyers is a prominent member of his party's House caucus for a very long time. And, I think unfortunately for his legacy had a bad end to his tenure in office. And look, the leadership of the Democratic Party in the House, John Conyers aside, who's now gone, is pretty old. And so there's going to be new blood in the party, new leadership. We're starting to see some new faces emerge. The Democrats may or may not win the House, but I feel pretty confident saying that they're going to have more members in 2019 than they have now. And some of those folks are going to represent the future of the party.
Is this going to be a more partisan Congress that emerges?
That's certainly been the trend in American life, and I think the Republicans have been pretty consistently moving to the right. I think the Democrats, maybe not as strongly as the Republicans, are moving to the right, but I think the Democrats are moving to the left too. And I think you see that in some of the new people who are getting elected. I think Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is a great example of that, who sort of ran to Joe Crowley's left, and Joe Crowley could have been Speaker potentially, but now he's going to be out of the House. The trend in American life over the last couple of decades, I think, has been toward kind of more polarization and sort of maybe sharper ideological divides on all sorts of issues.
All right, that's Kyle Condit, an analyst with Saboteau Crystal Ball at the University of Virginia. We hear a lot lately about fake news, and many in America wonder where they can get the most accurate information. The Washington Post recently released a startling report outlining their latest fact check on President Trump's statements since taking office. Joining us now to talk about the findings is Glenn Kessler, chief writer and editor of the Washington Post's fact checker. Glenn, thanks for being with us. So what did the report that you compiled conclude?
In 558 days, President Trump has made 4,229 false or misleading claims. And in particular, what's striking is that the number of false claims has gone up dramatically in the last couple months. He made almost 1,000 dubious claims in June and July. And in essentially 6 months, he's made as many false claims as he did in his first year in office.
Have you always compiled lists of presidential falsehoods, or is this something new?
This is something new. We fact-checked President Obama. We started during President Obama's term. We fact-checked President Obama, 250 times or so, and he earned lots of Pinocchios. You can imagine claims for which he earned Pinocchios. What was different with President Trump is that he makes many factual assertions that are incorrect. With Obama, it would be, you'd see it, but it would be, he wouldn't be talking all the time or tweeting like President Trump. And normally, a lot of the things he said were carefully vetted, so it was difficult sometimes to pick it apart. He would get in trouble when he spoke off the cuff, as opposed to reading from a speech, because when he read from a speech, they really worked hard to make sure his facts were correct. President Trump doesn't have that kind of rigor and speaks so often, and we were so overwhelmed that we couldn't fact-check everything he said. And also, because President Trump repeats a lot of the false facts he makes, even though he's been fact-checked, we didn't have a way, really, of keeping track of how many times he said something false, like, I passed the biggest tax cut in U.S. history, when, in fact, it's only eighth place.
So what you're saying is the numbers only go so far because you couldn't possibly fact-check all the statements that appeared to be untrue?
The key thing is the fact-checker is designed to help educate people about complex policy issues. So we use the fact-checks as a way to delve deeply into complex topics. It was easier to do with Obama because he would say things if it was not right or slightly right or slightly wrong. It gave us an opportunity to go deep into the subject. In President Trump, a lot of the claims he makes doesn't allow for a lot of substantial analysis. It can be dismissed or fact-checked in about three or four sentences, so which makes it more ideal for a database like this. I mean, we do fact-checks of Trump. We write a lot about what he says, but we don't do everything. There are a lot of times we say, oh, well, that was not right, but that goes in the database, because we can't talk about substantive policy issues with some of his statements.
As far as you can tell, how unprecedented are the numbers that you're seeing?
It's pretty unprecedented. And in part, it's because Trump is talking and tweeting so much. We didn't have Twitter before. A lot of things he says that are false end up in his tweet. We didn't have a president who was constantly making campaign rallies. And he did six. One reason why June and July are so high is he had six campaign rallies. And when he's in those campaign rallies, he just lets loose. We looked very closely at one rally in Montana. We counted 98 factual statements and found that 76 of them were false or misleading.
Is it something that's just ongoing that you're doing on a daily basis with the president? Are you continuing to compile and add to the list, and then periodically you'll do what you've just done, which is sort of tally it all up?
Yeah, we try to update it once a month. This started as a 100-day project, just to do it for the first 100 days. And readers demanded we keep it going, as we said, all right, we're going to do it for another year. And then when the year came up, readers again begged us, pleaded, please keep it going. So we're now committed for his entire term.
How difficult is it?
It's very difficult. There are three of us. You can imagine what it means to categorize and fact-check 500 statements a month.
Right. I mean, journalists are always, of course, tasked with seeking truth and being truth tellers. But I can imagine something like this would be a challenge, not like a normal day doing a journalist job of just making sure your facts are right.
Right. And it is in addition to the fact checks we run every day. So we do substantive fact checks, but we also have to maintain this database. That means listening or reading everything the president has said.
As your readers have been really adamant about wanting this to continue, are they expressing concern about the lack of truthfulness from their president?
Yes, they are expressing concern, and they also want to have a record in accounting. Some readers are afraid that it will become normalized and people will not really realize what's happening. And we're making this a contribution to history. There are already a number of academicians that have looked at our data and are doing studies and that sort of thing. So maybe we'll get a few PhD dissertations out of it.
All right. Glenn Kessler, chief writer and editor at The Washington Post's Fact Checker. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
When news breaks, VOA News is there.
VOA.
Around the clock, listen to VOA newscasts on the top of each hour, along with our detailed news shows and analysis.
VOA News. We're online at voanews.com.
At voanews.com.
VOAnews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.
VOA's International Edition continues. Well, many parts of the world are experiencing record heat this summer. California seeing earlier, longer, and more destructive wildfire seasons because of drought and warmer weather attributed to climate change. The deadliest wildfire in Greece's recorded history killed more than 90 people last month. These scenarios come as new reports show the planet is heating at a pace that could make some places uninhabitable in the coming decades. Joining us now is Dr. John Abraham, climate scientist at St. Thomas University in Minnesota. Tell us what we're seeing.
Some of the things you didn't mention are how badly hit Arctic countries are. I mean, we had heat waves in Canada and in Scandinavia, and we've had 90 degrees near the Arctic Circle. Europe's been hit, Asia's been hit, Africa's been hit. This is what we will expect to be routine as climate changes. Humans have emitted heat-trapping gases into the atmosphere for years now, and scientists have told us what was going to happen. And we're seeing it. And we've not only seen it this year, but we've seen it in past years with the crazy hurricanes last year, the incredible drought and heat wave in California, in the Midwest in 2012. So this is an ongoing trend, but it's getting worse and worse every year.
There seems concern, but not a will to do anything about it. And of course, here in the U.S., we have an administration that doesn't want to acknowledge that climate change is real. But it seems like that conversation should be way past even something we're having.
Fortunately, other countries are taking the lead. And if there's any silver lining that we have here is the U.S. is losing its ability to throw monkey wrenches into the gears of progress. And other countries are realizing that they need to take action and become the leaders because the U.S. won't. The U.S. is the worst country in the world when it comes to climate change. We're the only country not to have signed on to the Paris Accord, which is an international agreement to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. We have an administration who attacks scientists for reporting facts and reporting measurements. It is exactly true, as you've said, the U.S. is not taking action, but other countries are. And the beautiful thing is the solutions to climate change are also solutions to our energy problem. For example, wind and solar power are now so cheap they can compete head-to-head with coal power. So we're in a situation where no one in their right mind would build a new coal power plant because you can generate electricity with wind and solar, save the environment, and save money. And that's a tipping point of a good kind. It's a tipping point of economics that's going to bring us into a new era.
But you're saying that things are getting worse. It doesn't appear that whatever humans are doing right now to fix the situation is enough to stop what we continue to see happening.
Well, that's exactly right, Lori. We can't stop what's happening, and we're not doing enough to stop it. But what we can do is slow it down. And what we can do is create a bad situation from a horrific situation. If we continue business as usual, this world is going to be an ugly place to live in a few decades. But if we take action now to reduce our emissions and to develop more clean, renewable energy, we can turn this into just a bad situation that we can handle. So humans have the power to make this a lot less worse than it would otherwise be. Now, I tell you this, time matters. And if we would have taken action 2, 3, 4 decades ago, we wouldn't be in the predicament that we are now. But the longer we delay, the harder it is going to be to get off the track to catastrophe. And that's why every year matters and every administration matters.
Been seeing a lot of articles lately that saying we're really close to the point of no return. You know, you have a positive attitude about what we can do to change this. And we've been hearing that for a long time. But it just really doesn't seem like progress is moving fast enough to keep up with getting to the point of no return. And how close are we to that?
Well, it depends on what you define point of no return. If the point of no return is we're going to see climate change that really affects human societies, we're past that. But there are other points of no return that we want to keep our eye on that are also important. And those are points of no return where what are called feedbacks kick in. Let me give you an example. The ocean right now is doing us a great service by gobbling up a lot of the greenhouse gases that we emit into the atmosphere. But the ocean's ability to do that decreases as it warms. And at some point, we're going to cross a tipping point where the ocean is not able to
gobble up the greenhouse gases. That would be a point of no return for the ocean. That would be terrible. Another example is methane in the tundras in the Arctic. If we warm the Arctic too much, the ground will release its methane, which is a super strong greenhouse gas. So that would be another terrible point of no return. If we cross those, we're in a lot of trouble because then we lose control over the climate. But until we cross those tipping points, humans have our foot on the accelerator, and we can take our foot off anytime.
What do you think the likely outcome here is?
The likely outcome is it's going to get really bad, and people who are not able to afford adaptation will suffer the most, but everyone's going to suffer. Whether it's droughts or heat waves or whether it's floods, we have the infrastructure to handle it to some extent. But climate change is going to become so bad that even in the U.S., we're going to really struggle to deal with it. The future is going to be riddled with stories of very expensive costs to human society in both dollars and lives because we didn't take action.
All right. That's Dr. John Abraham, a professor of climate Scientology at St. Thomas University in Minnesota. Actress and singer Jennifer Lopez, or as she's fondly referred to in many circles, J-Lo, has a new tune and is about to get an important award. VOA Border Crossings host Larry London talked about it with International Edition's Steve Miller.
Me and Benjamin Franco stay at the Franco, getting checks like Nike.
And now I'm joined in the studio by our own Larry London. Thank you for stopping by.
Well, thank you for having me. Today we're going to be talking about the latest song from Jennifer Lopez and some brand new news about Jennifer Lopez.
Who J-Lo.
J-Lo just turned 49 July 24th.
No, I feel so old now.
And she looks wonderful. And here's something that might also surprise you. She's going to be starring in a film about strippers.
Really?
The film is called Hustlers. And according to New York Magazine, the film will be coming out sometime in 2019. And there's quite a story about the character she plays in the movie.
Oh, do tell.
Yeah, well, it's going to be an interesting film and an interesting story. And beyond what's been reported in the New York Magazine, there's not a whole lot to tell about it. But it's kind of another direction for Jennifer Lopez, who's always been, you know, in romantic comedy type films.
Well, it harkens back to the day. Remember when Demi Moore got that role in a stripper movie as well? And it was a very big departure from her rom-com days.
Yes. And it did very well for Demi Moore. I mean, she's quite versatile. So is Jennifer Lopez, who also has a TV production company. A New Yorican is what it's called, because she's part Puerto Rican. And so she's been producing and hosting one of the dance TV show contest type shows. And also they will be handing her the MTV Video Music Award Michael Jackson Vanguard Award on August 20th. She gets it this year, so congratulations to Jennifer Lopez on that. She continues to perform regularly in Las Vegas at Planet Hollywood, earning over $400,000 per show. And she's also on the TV show Shades of Blue. She's going to be on an NBC live musical television broadcast of Bye Bye Birdie in 2019
Well, that's one of my favorite musicals.
So she's just doing everything. She's got her new album out. It's her ninth CD. It's called Por Primera Vez, which in English means for the first time. And she starred in over 32 films, earning at the box
32?
Office.
32?
32 films.
I had no idea. I mean, I see her on television. I have seen Shades of Blue. I have seen some of her films in the past. Some of them good, some of them not so good, depending on which critics you talk to. but 32, that's an amazing number.
Well, here's another amazing number. Her films have grossed over $2.9 billion. At the box office.
Oh, man.
Pretty amazing as well.
That is outstanding.
So we're going to check out the latest song from Jennifer Lopez that features DJ Khaled and Cardi B, and the song is called Dinero.
Get it. Yo quiero dinero. Hey. Yo quiero dinero. Hey. I just want the green, want the
Larry, what else can you tell us about Ms. Lopez?
Well, she's in the news a lot lately, not for her career, but more for her personal life. She's raising twins, Max and Emmy, and she is a wonderful mother. She's very devoted, very dedicated. That's been her top priority the last few years. Of course, those children are from her previous marriage to Mark Anthony. But currently, Jennifer Lopez is dating a New York Yankees baseball star, former player Alex Rodriguez. The two of them each have two children, combined, there's four. There have been rumors circulating about an engagement that recently took place. Neither one of them is confirming they are, in fact, engaged. Mm-hmm. They are obviously in love. They've been together for a little over a year, and they were spotted over the weekend at a Boston Red Sox game, which is interesting for a former Yankees player.
True.
The Red Sox were playing the Yankees. And during the seventh inning stretch, Jennifer Lopez stood up and along with the crowd sang Sweet Caroline, the old Neil Diamond song.
God. So. One of my favorite songs. I get the bump up out there.
So that's what's going on with Jennifer Lopez. She's been very busy both with work and with her personal life as well. And she's got the new album and new song out.
Fantastic. Larry, remind us all where we can find you out on the radio tunes.
Well, you can find me at facebook.com/VOA Larry London for Border Crossings. And, of course, Border Crossings is broadcast every day on the VOA 1 Music Network.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Greg Burns. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have yourself a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The White House issued a statement strongly condemning the ongoing violence in Nicaragua and human rights abuses committed by the Daniel Ortega regime in response to protests. After years of fraudulent elections and the regime's manipulation of Nicaraguan law, as well as the suppression of civil society, opposition parties, and independent media, the Nicaraguan people have taken to the streets to call for democratic reforms. These demands have been met with indiscriminate violence, with reports of more than 350 dead, thousands injured, and hundreds of citizens labeled coupmongers and terrorists who have been arbitrarily detained, tortured, or who have gone missing. The White House noted that President Ortega and Vice President Rosario Murillo are ultimately responsible for the actions of the pro-government parapolice, who have brutalized their own people. The United States stands with the people of Nicaragua, including members of the Sandinista Party, who are calling for democratic reforms and an end to the violence. Free, fair, and transparent early elections are the only avenue toward restoring democracy in Nicaragua. The U.S. supports the Catholic Church-led national dialogue process for good faith negotiations toward that end. The U.S. is promoting accountability of Ortega government officials responsible for human rights abuse and corruption. Three Nicaraguan officials, Francisco Diaz, Fidel Moreno, and Francisco Lopez, have been sanctioned under Executive Order 13818, issued by the President of the United States to build upon the Global Magnitsky Human Rights Accountability Act. These steps, the White House said, are a start, not an end, of potential sanctions in response to continued serious human rights abuses and corruption. The United States is revoking or restricting visas of Nicaraguan officials and their families when those officials have been responsible for police violence against protesters and municipal authorities. The U.S. has also cut off further sales and donations of equipment that Ortega's security forces might misuse. The United States has announced an additional $1.5 million in aid to continue support for freedom and democracy in Nicaragua, providing a critical lifeline for civil society, human rights organizations, and independent media currently under threat from the Ortega regime. The United States called on the Ortega regime to immediately end the state-sanctioned violence perpetrated by police and parapolice forces. The United States will continue to closely monitor the situation in Nicaragua and work with the international community to hold those responsible for the violence to account.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.